Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer weiteren Episode vom Schallwandler. Mein Name ist Manuela Krause und heute bin ich im Gespräch mit Tyree Cooper aus Chicago. Es begann vermutlich alles mit den alten R&B-Schallplatten seiner Mutter. Auch im Radio in Chicago lief damals nichts anderes. Tyree Cooper hörte diese alten Aufnahmen häufig und gern und entdeckte so seine Liebe zur Soulmusik der 60er Jahre. Seinen ersten Schritt einer musikalischen Laufbahn machte er im jugendlichen Alter von 13 Jahren. Damals trat er seiner Grammar School Band bei und weil es das am leichtesten zu tragende Instrument war, entschied sich Tyree für die Flöte. Wirklich leidenschaftlich spielte er dieses Instrument jedoch nicht. Seine Leidenschaft galt damals dem Basketballspiel. Als dann auf der Highschool einer seiner besten Freunde mit dem Auflegen anfing, war das ein wichtiger Wendepunkt in seinem Leben. Schon bald fand der Teenager es wesentlich aufregender, das Auflegen, Mixen und Scratchen mit seinem Kumpel zu üben, als in die Highschool zu gehen. Auch wenn es für seine Mutter im ersten Moment vermutlich ein Schock gewesen sein muss, als Tyree verkündigte, er wolle DJ werden, hat sie sich ihm nicht in den Weg gestellt und sein Vorhaben unterstützt. Alles andere ist Geschichte. Heute gilt Tyree Cooper als einer der einflussreichsten Künstler der internationalen House-Szene. Seine Homebase hat er vor einigen Jahren von Chicago nach Europas aufregendster Hauptstadt Berlin verlegt. Von dort aus macht er noch immer, was er am besten kann. Er reist für Gigs durch die Welt, legt Platten auf und rappt und produziert neue Tracks auf seinem eigenen Label. Wenn er gerade Zeit hat, gibt er auch gern ein Interview, denn Tyree Cooper hat einiges zu erzählen.
If things have turned different or you at some point in your life had taken another path, it could have been that instead of meeting Tyree Cooper, DJ and music legend, I could sit here with a basketball legend.
Yeah. It could have very well been that. It could have, I know people that know me for a long time saying, oh man, you weren't that good at basketball. You wasn't all that. You didn't, yeah, but it's not necessarily about being good at the sport, is the persistence and the consistency and the amount of work ethic and work effort that you put towards it. And at my young age, that's all I had. It was just pure energy. So I just took that same energy and put it into house music. Well, that's why I found myself in different places, like different genres and different parties and, you know, meeting different people and stuff because, like back in Chicago, it was, you know, it was kind of, Chicago has never not been. It's always been a segregated city, probably the most segregated city in America. So, you know, you have whites on one side, blacks on another side, you have Spanish on one end, and then you have Latinos and Puerto Ricans on the other side, right? And everything else is just mixed in, Lithuanian, Germans, Assyrians, you name it, everybody's in Chicago, especially Polish. So it's a very segregated city. So by me, playing basketball through the whole city, that I was able to maneuver my way through Chicago music scene pretty much the same way.
So when you started with basketball, was that like really like your passion? Like, and did you start as a young boy, or how did you get into?
I got into basketball to stay out of trouble with my mother.
So she forced you.
You could say forced. I don't know if you're familiar with black mothers, but they have a way with making you understand. You know, I used to get in trouble a lot, and then she told me, either you're going to do right or you're going to go to jail, basically. So, I mean, she didn't say those words, but in a roundabout way. So, I liked basketball at that point. It was okay. But the moment I started playing it, it gave me so much enjoyment and so much happiness. It stopped me when I was in eighth grade, or eighth class, as they say in Germany, but in eighth grade, I thought I was good enough to play on a team.
So that was when you were a teenager at that time?
Well, 13. I was just beginning my team. I was good enough to play. I thought, let me rephrase that. I thought I was good enough to play on the basketball team in grammar school. Mm-hmm. I did make the team, but the coach was my teacher my eighth grade teacher, and my eighth grade teacher had three students in his class that were the top of the class, and as far as smartest kids in the class, right? Smartest kids in the school. I just happened to be one of them, so that's how I made the team, because I was smart, to make my long story short. And every time we would play a game, I would sit at the bench going, can I get in? And he's looking at me like, oh, you got to be kidding. I'm not putting you in at no time, Tyree. But when the game is over, he'll call the opposing coach over, and he'll ask the coach, how was your students? How's your athletes? Are they good student athletes? The coaches say, yeah, maybe, you know, whatever. And he say, he'll call one of the three of us over, like myself. He say, Tyree, what's the capital of Nebraska? What's the capital of New York? What's the capital of California? And add 365 plus 468, not from the right side, but add it from the left side, and do it without a piece of paper. All this stuff I was doing in eighth grade. And what does loquacious mean? What does nefarious mean? What does triskaidekaphobia, what do these words mean? And I'm explaining it to the coach. And the coach's mouth is just dropping. I'm going, what the? I felt so like a nerd, like I'm like a geek, somebody that's just being used. So it kind of let me off from basketball playing in school. So I kept playing, but I got better at it. And then my last year of high school, I was supposed to go to college, to another university. And I went there. And this, all of a sudden, basketball didn't make any more sense. Mm-hmm. It just didn't make any more sense. My best friend, his name is Hugo H. I'd known he was a DJ already, but he seemed like he was having more fun than me.
Was the one who introduced you to DJing?
He is definitely the one. He's the one that made me want to actually buy the records and spin them. Mm-hmm. Another friend of mine named they're the Johnson brothers, Norman and Sean and Albert. They were the first one I seen with actual equipment, and the youngest one, Sean, the first time I seen someone scratch in front of me. Mm-hmm. So that was the bug. I was a junior in high school, my third year in high school. That was the bug. Hugo is the one, since he was my best friend, you got your best friends in high school, mm-hmm. and your best friends say, well, I can jump over a car. No, you can't jump over a car. Watch me, then I jump over a car, boom. So Hugo thing was, I could DJ. Dude, you can't DJ. Mm-hmm. So we skipped school. Now that I'm a grown man, I can say that. We skipped school, and I went to his house, and he DJed for the first time in front of me, and it just blew my freaking mind. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no, my best friend cannot be this. Teach me Obi-Wan Kenobi. Teach me, And
so he had already also two record players.
Yeah, we used to sit in the parties. We go see Farley, Jack Master Funk, or Farley fucking Keith at that time, and we go see Farley, and he'll just say, "Oh, Farley he's playing garbage records, or he's just bullshitting, or he's messing up." And I'm going, I'm losing my mind on the dance floor. I'm going, ah, Farley, ah, and Hugo was going, yeah. He's all right. Yeah. So another friend of ours, his name was James, but we called him Jaywan, right? Jaywan said, they're having a DJ contest at the club, so why don't you get in, Hugo? And he did get in. He's supposed to have won. I still tease Farley to this day about that, to this very day. Mm-hmm. Farley's my big brother, have no animosity, but Hugo was supposed to win that contest. Farley hit the turntable and made the turntable.
Oh, that's not nice. It's not really fair play.
Yeah, no, it's not, because Hugo was beating Farley's favorite. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So Hugo had all the support from all of us and stuff. So, and he was killing it. And Farley hit the table and made the record skip, and then it made Hugo, made his set, or made the needle jump and everything, so it sounded very bad. And Farley's like, boo, and everybody's boo. Like, ah. So from that moment on, I've had the DJ bug and never let it go.
kurze Unterbrechung. Diese Folge wird gesponsert von Beyer Dynamic. Hörer des Podcasts erhalten im Onlineshop von beyerdynamic.de bei Bestellungen von über 100 Euro kostenlos die Beatbird In-Ears im Wert von 35 Euro dazu. Beim Checkout müsst ihr nur das Stichwort Schallwandler, alles groß, eingeben. Infos zum Kopfhörer findet ihr auf www.beyerdynamic.de/beat-bird mit Y.
So somehow like also coincidences, because like your best friend was spinning and then you saw the possibilities and you loved the sound, obviously. I mean, or did you ever like when you were younger? Because I think today a lot of young boys who see also a lot of DJs who are spinning, they might think like, yeah, when I grow up, I want to be a DJ too. So that was not the case
for me
at your time.
Nah, it wasn't. And again, I was afraid of my mother. And that sounds strange, but she told me, you know, once I stopped playing basketball, that was my free ride through college. And I told her, I'm not going back to school. And I told her I was going to be a DJ. And she thought I was crazy. Mm-hmm. She was like, in my house, you either have to get a job, mm-hmm. go to the Army, Navy, Air Force, or Marines, or go to school. I just left school. I thought about going to the service. And I was not getting a job. So I said, Mama, I'm going to be a DJ. And, you know, basically, you know, whatever I said, she said, okay. And she kind of left me alone.
That's cool.
Yeah, because, you know, I wasn't going to get in any kind of trouble with the police or anything mm-hmm. like that. Or, you know, have a bunch of girls running out through my house or anything like that. None of that was in her mind. It was just, what kind of life was I going to have as a DJ? Because at this time, DJing wasn't as popular as it is today. Mm-hmm. It was just, at this time, especially in Chicago, it was growing into a business. It was growing into mm-hmm. a culture, or to a culture first in a business.
Was it at that time also, like, because I remember, like, at the very beginnings, because I've been once in old kind of clubs, that the DJ didn't even bring his own records, right? You had this kind of, they had all these, like, big
In Chicago, it was different.
Or was never like that?
Not in Chicago, no. In Chicago, they did have clubs like that.
Mm-hmm.
They had clubs that had their... all the DJ had to do was show up because they bought the music for the DJ to play that mm-hmm. night in their club because the club owner knew the audience, mm-hmm. knew the patrons that was coming to his club. When I was coming up at when, you know, Hugo Farley, Steve Hurley, Andre Hatchett, Mike Dunn,
mm-hmm.
any one of the original, Wayne Williams, everyone carried, okay, you're supposed to carry your own records. There are stories where some people carry other people's records mm-hmm. to get in the parties, and they became famous out of that. Like Farley carried Jesse Saunders records. Like I carried Mike Dunn records. Or Mike Dunn would tell you, he carried my records. Mm-hmm. But we were DJ partners, so mm-hmm. we carried each other's records. I carried Hugo H's records. Or Hugo would say, I never carried your records, Tyree. we were all partners. So my point is, we didn't, as far as house music, when the culture was being formed, we didn't have clubs. We had clubs. For sure, Chicago has many clubs,
mm-hmm.
but the scene didn't jump off in clubs. That's a European thing or a London thing where the club is the focus. We had any place where we could have a party at.
Mm-hmm.
That's where our parties were. So
you made it yourself, basically. Find a spot where you could put up the system and then...
Pretty much, yeah. You had to rent a space. You know, you had to rent a veteran of Foreign Affairs Hall. I don't have that in Germany, or they don't have that in Europe, so... the Catholic Church, I tell people all the time, the Catholic Church has been very, very good to house music.
Why is that?
Because the Catholic Church has kept a lot of bad people off the streets when I was coming up as a DJ. Because the best parties and the best looking women were at the Catholic parties.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Secondary school and or high school. You know, you could throw a party there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you may pay $1,000 to rent the hall, but you made $7,000 when it was over with. So we didn't have a club.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the best sound systems from, you know, from this speaker, da da da. You know, we had people like this guy named Frenchie, Dwayne Woods, Bob Simmons. They had these sound systems that was that were known to us as DJs was mobile systems that it, when they set up, it sounded like you was in a club. So these were, this was our setup. And we even played in the park where the guys would bring out the, or Galaxy Promotion, they had a sound system too, right? So they would bring out systems and stuff and invite DJs to come out and play. So that built the culture of Chicago DJ and the house music. Mm-hmm. We didn't have the club like that. This culture has been distorted in the way, you know, because DJs think that they have to be in a club, or promoters, you know, the party's always in the club. Mm-hmm. But in Europe, yes, it has to be, because Europeans, they don't get a chance to rent out halls, because some of them have, some countries don't have veteran of foreign affairs, veteran of foreign wars halls, or Catholic churches that will lend them their banquet halls, or places to even have loud music, because they're trying to end it in Europe, right? But in America, back in the day, it was happening all the time. This was our, these were our clubs. We had underground, we had the warehouse, we had the power plant, we had the music box, we had Rialto's, Club de Race, no clubs like this. But if you was homophobic, you know, you wasn't going to some of these clubs. So what we did on the south side, north side, and west side, we brought all that to the neighborhoods.
That's also nice, like, to bring the music, like, right there where the people are.
Yeah, well, this is how you get all these.
But, I mean, that's also how it started over here. I mean, like, at the beginning, it wasn't a business. There were just, like, people who really loved the music and wanted to hang out with others and share the records they discovered and play to each other. And, like, I mean, that was just how everything began. And I guess, like, from that point, probably as you described, it sounds also like, I mean, there was no business at the beginning when you started, right? I mean, it was just
The business,
you, your friends, and the passion for the music.
Well, okay, the business has always been there, because if you're good and you start soliciting business cards to different people to you know, we this thing in Chicago we had where young people would go to is, it's called proms. Prom is the, it would be considered like a formal affair where the young people dress up and have a great night out, a good evening, and a formal occasion where, you know, bow tie, tuxedo.
Okay.
Girls wear a long gown. Mm-hmm. It's very, very formal. But at the end of that, it's party time. You know, they really get down and want to, you know, get loose. So, and if you're able as a DJ to do a few of those, then you get pretty known. DJing has always been a business. Since the emergence of house music or techno music, or I can't speak for the other genres, but I'm just mentioning them. But it, for as far as Chicago and house music, no, it was the beginning of creating this culture, because we had nothing. We had nothing. So from nothing became something. And from that something, you hear all of us. And I say all of us, from me to Jimmy 326, from Farley to DJ Gatman, from Ron Hardy to Roy Davis, from Frankie Knuckles to K Alexi. You know, it spans from that to today. This is the trend that I experienced or was a part of back in the day. So the music came almost unnatural, because once Jesse Saunders put out her first record, it was like, yeah, okay. But when Farley put out a record, it was over, because now it's like, okay, anybody can put out a record. We had no clue what kind of record we were gonna put out. Some of us didn't even know what a bass line, chords, melodies, any of that. We play one note, and if that note worked, that's what we use. We could make a beat, that beat worked with that one note, that's what we use. Because it worked, because it worked within the culture, because that's what was needed for the culture at that moment from that artist. If you like keyboards and, you know, all this melodic jazz stuff and all this, you know, all this beautiful music, yeah, then the same thing, you know, same thing happened. So all that came from the culture of DJing.
Did it happen then for you that from being a DJ, how did you then get into the next step of becoming a producer, because you said before, like, there was hardly any equipment, there were some guys who had something, and if it was a big thing at that moment to start with the DJing, and so how would then be the next step? How do you get the stuff to make your own tracks, or how did you get into it yourself?
Exactly. Again, either A, you played so much, like I said, it was a natural progression. First and foremost, when we started DJing, and when Jesse Saunders put out his stuff, put out his records, Vince Lawrence, Mitchell Bar Records, Farley, his label Chippy, you know, these type of people, when they started putting out their records, I think they only had like a year and a half run because it was just them. And then all of us started coming out. Mm-hmm. The Mike Dunns, Tyree Coopers, Thompson Lenore's, Fast Eddie's, mm-hmm. DJ Pierre's, Future, you know, all of us started coming out mm-hmm. rapidly, because the next step was producing your records, but to produce what you're playing. Now, that's the key. How do you produce what you're playing if you're playing disco? Mm-hmm. And you don't have a guitarist. Mm-hmm. You don't have a drummer necessarily, but you have this sound in your head. So how do you get it to come out? Which drum machine, which keyboard, which sequencer, which one do you use when you have absolutely no clue? Mm-hmm. And that was the beauty of house music, because we didn't know. We just went forth like, oh, this sounds good. Oh, I can get this singer to sing. Oh, she sounds terrible. He sounds terrible. No, it don't. It sounds good. Watch. And you play at the party, people, and they go, oh, wow. So, and you progress from that, from your first record to the next record, to the next record, to the next record. You just make a natural progression. But it starts with that confident feeling of, okay, I know this works here. This format works. Mm-hmm. I know this format works. So this formula works. Mm-hmm. This formula works. If you can get your head into that formula, you know, whatever the formula may be, just a kick drum, hi-hat, and a snare, and you put everything around it. If you, whatever formula or format you fit yourself into, you get into that, and then you will figure out everything else. So I can imagine, like Pierre said, they bought this machine and it's made all these weird sounds. And when they plug the kick drum up to, when they plug the drum machine to it, the kick drum on top of these weird sounds made it sound funky, you know? So I can imagine that accident becoming a hit. You know, for as far as hip house goes, I wouldn't necessarily say it was an accident, but it was more of a rebellious act, because Fast Eddie didn't want to do house records anymore. He was totally into hip hop. So I guess he just said, screw that, screw this label. I'm doing hip hop. The label said, screw you, screw that. You got to do some house. So they made a compromise. Mm-hmm. So he said, okay, I'm going to rap over this house. And so that's what he did. So hip house was born out of that rebellious. Mm-hmm. And at that time, it was a rebellious time in our culture. Public Enemy, X-Clan, mm-hmm. You know, all these political proactive groups were coming out at the same time. So yeah, at that time, it was good for the culture. And for myself, Turn Up the Bass was one of those braggadocious, true to the sense of hip hop and house, very braggadocious, about me, and have fun at a party. You can't touch me, I'm the best, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It was all within the scene, within the culture, because that's what the culture was providing. Mm-hmm. And again, with Deep House, with Joe Smooth, with Promised Land, and Ten City, with Devotion, all this melodic music, they was feeling from within, because at that time when it was coming out, that was the sound that was going around in Chicago called Deep House. So,
but let's go back to when you started to produce, because somehow I feel like you did not answer yet what I wanted to ask, but maybe also
I was getting there. Okay. How can you afford all this equipment when it was?
I mean, not just afford, also like, because like now you said something like you had this idea of how things should sound.
So exactly.
Did you have a concept before?
No, when you think of the record that you're trying to emulate, mm-hmm. or that you have in your head. First of all, to get the equipment, that's what I was getting to. I was just backing the story up to go to the beginning.
Okay.
To even get to that point, you either A, had to know somebody with some equipment.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing.
Okay.
So you can get what's in your head out. Because I'm quite sure Pierre might have thought he was going to make a disco record, mm-hmm. when he got a bass line. I'm quite sure Marshall Jefferson wanted to make rock music when he got his equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, he got his equipment. He had a good job to get it. I don't know how Pierre came up with his 303. I know how I came up with the instruments that I use for my song, which I borrowed from Marshall Jefferson. So you can imagine Move Your Body, the biggest house record on the planet, would have probably been done with the 808 drum machine. But the fact that Mike Dunn, Hugo H, and Tyree Cooper had his drum machine for 6 months, mm-hmm. he did Move Your Body with a 707. So, and my first record was just with the drum machine. Mike Dunn's record was just with the drum machine. You know, Farley's first record was just with the drum machine.
So you borrowed it and then you worked on it?
Well, I borrowed Marshall's. Farley must have borrowed Jesse Saunders. Jesse Saunders bought his. Mm-hmm. Maybe borrow Vince Lawrence's, who knows? Mm-hmm. But it was never a point where you had to have certain specific machines. Mm-hmm. It was just the point, if you knew someone who had it and you were cool with them, then you could go over to their house or mm-hmm. start doing a record with them.
But that's also a very different spirit than these days, because I just thought, like, people who want to make music today, they just have this thing in their head, yeah, but before I can start, I need my studio, I need speakers, I need this,
Oh, shit.
And the way you're describing it is a completely different approach.
Oh, it's totally different. You know, even if you had equipment, right? Even if you had equipment, you didn't necessarily have studio monitors. You had your normal house speakers. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You had your house speakers that you would use as monitors. You couldn't tell how much bass you were putting in only by the feeling. House is a feeling that no one can deny. You know, it is a feeling. You hear a record different. I don't care if it's rock, jazz, rhythm, blues, funk, soul. You hear it differently than I do. I interpret it differently than you do, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So that feeling that you hear when you hear Turn Up the Bass, Acid Over, Acid Tracks or whatever, Move Your Body, the first instance is, oh, this is good. I mean, with anything, of course, hip hop, jazz, mm-hmm. this is good, but from my opinion, house carries a different jovial emotion. It's a full body mm-hmm. jovial emotion, but we call it jacking. Some people, it could be considered sensuous. It could be considered revolutionary thinking, you know, meaning it woke you up to an epiphany to something, because it sometimes has a strong connotation to it, has a strong message, has a strong body to the music.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, that was also what was happening that time. I mean, for example,
exactly.
Me at that time, I was pretty young when the whole stuff started, and I was raving a lot. I didn't do anything else but dance and go out partying and working a bit in clubs where they had the music. But it was like, I don't know, it was really something that you had to dance, and somehow this kind of, it forced you to dance,
right.
But in a way that somehow something could heal by just make you move and stop thinking and get in the music.
That's
and
what I'm talking
be
about.
With everyone in the same kind of field and dance.
That's what I'm talking about. Mm. That's house music. That's why I say it's a body. It's a body feel. It's not just a mind. It's a whole body.
But I mean, today it doesn't feel like that anymore. How do you feel about a lot of stuff that's released as house music today? I mean, do you think it still has the same spirit? Because there's also so much stuff which is more like kind of very cheesy, easy background stuff to create a kind of atmosphere, but it's not really touching anymore. Is it just my opinion?
No, it's not your opinion. No, this is very true. First of all, you know, we're talking about young people that through that in their lifetimes, before they even touched the record, they got everything was handed to them. Everything was there for them. When I was growing up, maybe when you were growing up as well, everything wasn't so accessible as it is. So by everything being so accessible, it makes it a bit cheesier. Mm-hmm. You know, when it wasn't so accessible, people had to work for it. You had to thrive to get it. You had to basically earn it.
Oh, that also gives it another value, because if you really want something and you have to go for it, and it's not just like laying everywhere around, you can just pick it and then you get bored, pick the next. I mean, it's a different thing.
Listen to the music scene. Mm. They come in the daytime, and by the nightfall, they're out. And the next day, there's a new person coming in the daytime, by the nighttime, it's out. Because it's just a factory, it's just a machine. They can pump these things out, especially when it comes to house music, because they can take anybody mm-hmm. that can have any digital audio workstation or a DAW system, Logic, Nuendo, Fruity Loops, whatever, it doesn't matter, it makes them instantly, to them, it makes them instantly a credible producer. Not that they've actually sat and learned production. I didn't go to school for production either. I was in high school. I was in a high school band that I hated.
The flute?
Yeah, exactly. I hated that. But within that, there was still a structure, a music structure. Mm-hmm. Some of these cats just come in and they fly by night. They get it eventually, and then they have their own little method to their madness. But that's all that they know is just this method. And when they switch, when it's unsuccessful, then they just give up the whole damn thing. Mm-hmm. That's just what I see. But as far as the music scene overall, they're younger than us. They have a whole different side of energy than us. Their level of hotness is different than ours. Mm-hmm. I'm sure my mother or your parents would think the music that we were listening to and that I was doing were, well, okay, I can't say my mother. My mother was a party girl, so she loved my music. But, you know, on an average, a jazz musician even, mm-hmm. you know, would thought that house music was a piece of shit mm-hmm. because it was so monotone. It had no feeling. It wasn't like jazz, that jazz took you everywhere. But it is. House mm-hmm. music is that.
Well, I mean, to experience this transcendental part of it, you have to really get into it. And if your mind stops you at the very first beginning because you didn't hear it straight away, I mean, it's the same with jazz. It doesn't take you, you know, somewhere straight away. You have to get into and go the way.
That's exactly. But see, when you're selling records, then that mind frame or that thought pattern doesn't play a factor because your mind or you're selling records to the what they call the masses, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that don't even care about house, techno, drum and bass, whatever they hear on the radio, that's what they want. Mm-hmm. So if you have a house record that can cross over to a commercial chart, mm-hmm. they'll take that from the label, put it on the major label, promote the shit out of it. Maybe you get a million selling record, mm-hmm. but and everyone thinks, okay, now house music has made it. Ooh, is they have a number? No, the next record that they have from the guy or the girl has to be bigger than mm-hmm. that record. And 9 times out of 10, it isn't. It probably would have been if it was on a normal club circuit, a normal mm-hmm. club promotion, normal, normally dealing with clubs. But the fact that it's a major is only about money, then you kill a scene. So when you have this going, yeah, the scene gets a bit cheesy. It gets a bit thin. Because the ones that was doing it from the beginning, the purveyors of house order, I mean, I don't mean from 1983 doing it. I mean the ones that persevered through house music, you know, like people like yourself, like other moderators, other distributors, other, you know, DJs, and, you know, it's not enough of y'all. It's not enough of us to make a difference in that sense. And then two, we're not nobody's parents. We can't tell a kid that's shit music. This is good music. That's crappy. This is good. We're not their parents. We're not your, mm-hmm. you know, everyone has their own opinion on what's good and what's bad. It's just, they don't know that it's bad. You know, that's the sad part. They don't know that this is crap. So now, as I've been DJing, the kids or the young people or the young folks or younger folk, they're into this 90s thing, right? When the 90s house music is exciting. And I tell you, 5 years before that, 10 years before that, it was the Chicago house music, the original place. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the original sound of Chicago. Now it's New York sound. The next is gonna be somebody else's sound because they have no one to teach them. Mm-hmm. So they're doing this on their own. Not that it's a bad thing, again. It's just, if you don't have a credible teacher, then you can learn anything without any knowledge. You just know a bunch of shit. You know what I mean? You just know a whole bunch of shit, but not knowing any one particular thing in its entirety or enough of it. So, but a lot of them are cool with that. They don't feel the need to know Tyree Cooper. They don't feel the need to know about what I've done in the past, or they only go up to this genre to a certain age because they're only so old. So my early 80s stuff, they don't really know. Mm-hmm. If I mention a DJ International record, they go, oh, I just know Dance Mania. Or I just know the record that you did on this label. Mm-hmm. I'm going, wow. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, how far their knowledge is, mm-hmm. just the depth of their knowledge. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. And so you can't really fault them. You can and you can't.
So would you say that people back then had more knowledge or were more interested than, for example, young people today who are listening to music?
It's a different generation growing up. These kids are my kids. So I'm supposed to be teaching. I was supposed to have taught them better. So people in my generation, this is the actions of their of what they've given them as an education. And if you know 20 years ago, there were so many subgenres. So many subgenres. So if you take a kid that's 33 today, 20 years ago, when he was 13, he had so many subgenres. Mm-hmm. How can he place love to a scene where there's so much of it? Mm-hmm. So now it's his turn or her turn to be a DJ. So they can pull energy from everywhere because they've gotten so much of it. When I was coming up, it was a closed kind of energy. You only had black radio. You only had white radio. If you listen to rock music, you had the rock station. Mm-hmm. You know. So when you listen, if you live anywhere in my community, it was only black stations being played.
So what would you hear? Kind of like R&B?
Always R&B. Only R&B. Mm-hmm. Only R&B. Only R&B. R&B and fuck music, love music. Mm. You know, late night, slow music, you know, I call it fuck music, excuse my French. So this is your influence. Unless you ventured off and you like jazz, you turn into a jazz station, and that would be your comfort zone. You know, or college station where they got a little bit more in depth in the music. And that would be your comfort zone. No problem. Here in Europe in the last 20 years, the radio has been so obsolete. It's been so non-existent for listening to new music. For young kids to get inspired for, it just plays the same thing. And again, don't have a problem with it. I love it when they do that because when they play my record, I get paid. So I don't have a problem with it. It's just that there's no difference in today and yesterday and today. The radio still doesn't help. It never helped. It's just what we did in Chicago on the streets that was more exciting than what the radio was playing every day. So the culture was that much stronger. So the culture's not that, in individual countries, the culture's not that strong. Everyone wants to be house, but no one wants house. Everyone wants to claim that they know what house is, but have no idea what the culture is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they know the culture is from Chicago, but they don't know any of the customs, Chicago customs. The yo, what's up, dude? Hey, my man. You know the colloquialisms, how we talk to each other. Mm-hmm. You know, Mark, Joe, and these are not names. This is an association too. You know what I'm saying? If you don't know that, like when hip hoppers go, you can tell when someone is being slandered if they're a hip hop person. You know, mm-hmm. you get the poses, okay. You get the suggestions. Mm-hmm. You don't get that when you come to house music, unless you're talking to someone that's been doing it for a long time. What up, Joe? My man, what's good? What's good? You get the conversation. Mm-hmm. And all I said to you, what you thinking is, I said, hey, what's going on? But your name is not Joe. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't get that. Oh, this Mark is tripping. Oh, yeah, it'd be like that. You know, the whole colloquialism about the culture, the Hey, B, did you get this record? Such, the whole vibe, the whole energy. None of that is happening today.
I was wondering, because you spoke a lot also now about the old times and how it was, are you sometimes a little bit nostalgic? I mean, like, are you sad?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Are you sad that
not
things
sad.
Have changed so
not
much
sad,
today?
No.
Or how is it for you today when you spin? I mean, are you still having, because I see you also playing still festivals, and you're still around and you're producing stuff from time to time. Are you still as passionate about it? Or that something that has become more like a brand job now? Because I've read in some of the interviews that you said some of the tunes that you made earlier on felt more like kind of, you don't call them rent, but rent tracks.
I'm making rent tracks now. Are you kidding?
All right.
So do you understand what a rent track is?
I mean, yeah, we call it broad job. So from time to time, you do something which is still nice, and you do, and you put all your energy in, but you have to do it because you have to pay your rent and you have to eat. So it's a broad job. So I guess that's probably the same.
It is exactly the same thing. So, you know, again, but even when I make my rent tracks, the rent tracks that I've made have been classic records. Mm-hmm. You know, but as far as being nostalgic, nah, yeah, yeah, Nah, kind of, sort of. It's nostalgic. It was just a fun moment back in the day. Mm-hmm. I'm really appreciating it now that I'm older. Yeah, I've been more freer now. But nostalgic, yeah, I miss meeting some of my friends that I was at the parties, some of the retarded, crazy, idiotic shit I used to do at parties. Oh my goodness, was I a silly man. I do didn't mean that in an honest way. I was a silly, silly man. I do miss that. I miss talking to Ron Hardy. I miss talking to Frankie Knuckles. Not necessarily, we wasn't never necessarily like best friends or anything like that, but just on a DJ camaraderie kind of thing. I miss that. Wayne Williams, Farley. I miss talking to the older DJs, you know, Sam Chapman and stuff like that. I miss talking to that stuff. Miss hanging out with my sisters. Peace out to the First Lady. Peace out to Chick. Mm-hmm. Peace out to my sister, Osi. I miss hanging out with my sisters. My sister, Chick, who sang I Fear the Night, mm-hmm. who's also probably my best friend. Anywhere I went, my sister Chick went with me. My sister Chick even got me into singing mm-hmm. and even the yeah. beginning of production even.
Okay, that's nice. Yeah, somehow she kind of encouraged you.
Influenced me. She met Adonis before I did. Mm-hmm. Adonis that made Too Far Gone, Ain't No Way Back. She met him before I did. Mm-hmm. She knew Adonis before me.
Is she older than you?
No, I'm older than her. That's the funny thing.
Nice.
But she liked to sing. She liked music. She liked to sing. So she was a little bit outgoing. Both Chrissy and Chick were my two sisters that were way more outgoing than I was. Mm-hmm. My sister Chrissy was DJing in 1980. She was playing records in 1980. You know what I mean? She was messing around DJing, learning how to DJ. My sister Osi, she was a singer too. She loves to sing, just sing. My sister Osi was, Miyoshi Morris is her name, but we call her Osi. Mm-hmm. She would love to sing all day. So they're my favorite influences, and they inspire me to do what I do now. But they're my little sisters. I mm-hmm. like watching over them and stuff, right? So they've been most inspirational. And I forgot my line of thought, but yeah, I love my sisters. I'm sorry.
That's fine. That's very nice.
You may cut that out, but I just love my sisters.
No, that's very fine.
Sometimes I do feel nostalgic. Sometimes. Not all the time. Mm. I only get that way sometimes if I'm playing in Berlin or in certain places around the world. Mm. I walk in a club and it instantly reminds me of someplace in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Instantly.
And then you get homesick.
And then I get... I don't get homesick. I get party homesick. Mm-hmm. You know, like... Oh shit, I could play blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And when I start going into my set, the people are not really feeling that set that I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And I have to change, going, oh right, I'm not in Chicago. I'm in wherever in the world that I'm at. I'm going, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But that's the only time. But nah, nostalgia, I don't miss it like that. Like I wouldn't sit and cry, like, I wish the old days would come back. Mm-hmm. No, I'm happy them motherfuckers is gone. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for new days because it makes it brand new. It makes it a brand new day. It's fresh air, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I feel smarter than everybody. When I was growing up, I felt dumber than everybody. Now I feel smarter than everybody. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, but I don't feel sad. I don't feel nostalgic in that way. That's my point. I'm taking it as it comes.
So in one of the interviews I've read, there's someone asked you why you moved to Berlin, and you just described shortly. But then you said that if they want to find out the whole story, why you moved from Chicago to Berlin, they should read your book. So yeah. I was wondering, did you finish with your autobiography?
No. I'm trying to find a ghostwriter to write it for me.
Okay. That's nice. That's okay, cool.
But I am going to write a book very soon.
Okay, but that's really a plan you want to, like,
someone
who can write and you tell them.
Exactly. Cool. So I'm good with writing and stuff. It's just the grammar. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when I read a book, I read books that's exciting. Although it could be about economy, it could be about you know, these crazy conspiracy theory mm-hmm. kind of things or whatever, you know. But as long as it's exciting, like I love. But one of my favorite books is Freakonomics, you know.
Freakonomics.
Freakonomics.
That's a funny word.
Fucking great book. That and The Key, The Trick to Having Money. Mm-hmm. I like that book. And my favorite book of all time, Guns, Germs, and Steel. Okay. The Fate of Human Society. I love these books because it's very exciting to read and it's very educational at the same time. So when I write a book, I want it to have that same feel when I read.
Excitement. Educational.
Exactly. So nice. I've been trying to find a good ghostwriter to write for me. So if anybody out there, you know, that's good at writing books, and you know, holler at your boy through Manuela, so she can get the email from you, because that's one of the things I'm trying to do. Is a good one, a really really good one in English, please.
Okay, that's cool. You know, one thing I want to ask is something that I always ask, because this is somehow a topic I'm very interested in. This is, how important is spirituality, like, for yourself in your own life? And if you would call yourself a spiritual person?
Oh, for sure. I'm a Sagittarian. I'm all about spirit. I don't believe in God, if that's what you mean. Not necessarily knowing about a higher power than yourself or anything like that, but just I know who I am. I know myself. So with that, I feel free, I am free to do what I do and act how I act, because I don't impose anything against anyone. Unless aggression is opposed against me, then yes, I am aggressive to that person. If you're nice to me, I'm gonna be overly nice to you. If you're gonna be polite to me, I'm gonna be equally or overly polite to you. Mm-hmm. So my internal spirit within is always good. I'm always smiling inside, although I say to myself, how can a clown be sad? Because I'm a clown sometimes, and sometimes I'm sad. So a clown can never be sad. So I have to find a way to pick myself up, even though when I think the odds, or when the odds are against me, or when I think the world is treating me unfairly. So I have to find a place within myself to find myself to come out and be who the person I'm always supposed to be, or be the person that I see myself within to come out. But yeah, for sure, I'm spiritual. I'm a Sagittarian. All Sagittarians are spiritual if they know who they are.
What moves you? I mean, is there anything that kind of gives you the energy to get up every day and do what you're doing? And if so, what is that?
Everything, just the beauty of waking up, just the beauty of opening my eyes and looking like, fuck, I'm in Germany, fuck, I'm still here. Or I wake up, I'm in Poland, or I'm in France, or I'm in Australia, or anything like that. You know what I mean? Just to wake up, you know, that's the first thing that motivates me. And everything else after that is icing on the cake. So if I can open my eyes, wake up, put my feet on the ground, look around, I see my wife next to me, my daughter will come in the room. All these things before I start my day motivates me. I could be groggy, you know, rumble. But still, my internal self is like, okay, I've seen another day. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can handle this. Whatever's coming my way, I can handle it. Mm-hmm. And then when everybody's not at home, then I smoke me a joint.
Okay, that's cool.
Same thing I feel on my birthday. What you gonna do on your birthday? Hopefully wake up.
That's cool.
Well, man, come on, man, stop playing. No, this shit is not guaranteed. I appreciate, I am so grateful for everything that has happened to me, the good and the bad, the happy and the sad, the minimal and the, oh man, it's some bullshit. I'm happy for all that because it motivates me, it charges me, it's helping to complete me in this spiritual plane, or in this plane. Mm-hmm. Who knows what will be in another lifetime, if there is a such thing, or you know, whatever. But in this plane, I'm trying to be the best person I can be.
So
the last question.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to speak about? Like, I mean, is there anything you're working on? Like, some new stuff coming out that you want to speak about now so people should know?
Well, the new stuff I have coming out is with the one record I got coming out now is with Adonis, speaking of, with Adonis and another one of my good friends. Her name is Isis Salam. She's a beautiful singer, beautiful rapper. She's sweet as a rapper, if you ask me. She's the new Lauryn Hill. Once she gets her head to it, she's the new Lauryn Hill. She is that dope. Her and I did a record. It was an Adonis record that I remade. Mm-hmm. And it's coming out now on my label, Chicago Vinyl Records, only vinyl. There's nothing coming out July, August, and September. The record will be out.
Perfect.
So I did that, and I have another record coming out with another guy from Chicago. His name is Harry Dennis. He's formerly from the group called The It. I did a record with him called The Garden of House. The one with Adonis is called Passing Through the House. And that's CVR number 8 is Passing Through the House. CVR number 9 is Harry Dennis. And CVR number 10 is mine. It's called Can You Help Me? And the hook is Can You Help Me Find My Weed? That's just the whole.
Sounds like a good song.
it's definitely a Tyrese song.
Nice.
And I've also just did a license deal with Belly Breaking Even. Shout out to Pete. What up, Pete? I did a deal with them for DJ Spinner and Kai Elise. DJ Spinner licensed hardcore hip hop for my catalog, and Kai Elise licensed Video Crash for my catalog. So both of those on 7-inch through BBE. What else I got coming up?
That's quite something, though.
Yeah, it's more shit I just can't think of. Watch, as soon as I walk out of here, I'm like, oh, man, I could have told her. I have one more thing coming up. Roland Electronics. In the coming months, I'll be doing a seminar down in, what is it called? It's in Germany. Toman,
okay. Did a seminar
I'm
there.
Going to.
Oh, you're going to? Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to.
Wow.
I'll do a seminar down there. And what else? Yeah, I think that's it for this month.
All right.
Next month, I'm not for sure what's happening next month. You catch me next month.
Quite a lot, though. That's cool.
Yeah,
all right, so you're not getting bored.
No.
Okay.
I'm a clown. I make myself laugh to keep myself from being bored. And I make music. I make a track just for the fuck of it.
Mm-hmm.
It may not never get released, but just to keep myself, my sanity, I sit down on my computer and just go, click. Okay. Da-da-da-da. Okay, click. And just have it on a loop. Just go, oh wow, this sounds nice. And you know, you can say to yourself, what you gonna do with this? I'm going, nothing.
No, just listen.
Just listening to it, right? Just listen.
Someone asked you in an interview if your stuff is faster, and you said, no, actually it's not, it's slower, but somehow with special or certain kind of manipulation, you can make things sound faster. So I was wondering what you're doing to a tune to make it faster, if it's BPM-wise.
I remember that.
Not that fast.
I remember that interview. Now, what the guy was asking me is my music, is it faster than... I think was it faster than hip hop, or was it faster than any of the normal records? My point was, you can take a record at 125 BPMs, and you can make it sound like it's 125 BPMs. Or you can take the record, strip it, and make it sound slower than what it really is, because the parts are, there's spacing in between. Mm-hmm. You know, there's spacing between certain elements of the track.
Mm-hmm.
So it won't sound fast at all,
mm-hmm.
although it's at the same speed. I did a party. Where is this? It's in the south of Germany. Neckargemon or Neckar? Someone in Neckar? Someone in the south near
Neckar is a river.
Yeah, somewhere near the. Mannheim. Sorry,
Mannheim. Okay, yeah.
It's Mannheim. Mm-hmm. And the DJ playing before me. He was playing electro, but it sounded very, very fast.
Mm-hmm.
It sounded very, very fast, but it was only at 126 BPMs.
Mm-hmm.
So when I play, I can mix right in. Normally I wouldn't, but sometimes I do. So I let the crowd know, hey, there's a difference. I'm over here now. Hello. Mm-hmm. There's a difference. That was that guy, but it's me now.
Mm-hmm.
So as I was playing, the promoter walked over to me and said, hey, can you make it a bit faster? I said, dude, I'm at the same tempo as the last DJ. Mm-hmm. He said, no, you playing slow. And so he looked at the BPM counter on the mixer, and he said, oh, wait, it is the same tempo. I was like, yeah, it depends on what you're doing, how it sounds. So when you stretch it out, mm-hmm. when you space out the productions, or when you space out your production in your track, mm-hmm. you can make it sound like, it seems like it's going slower, make it seem, but it's still the same track. It's mm-hmm. still the same speed as prior to the track. So my point is to ask you a question. If you space your tracks, put elements in there to make it seem like it's slower, then it will sound slower. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you only notice that it's faster when you have the pitch on +8. You go, damn, this shit is really fast. Mm-hmm. Then, oh, okay. Wow, it sounds slow. You know, certain things, I'm not going to give any secrets out to producers like, oh, that's so stupid. That don't make any sense. You can't do that. Yeah, you can do anything in a 4-4 tempo. Try that shit in a 6-8. Try that shit in a 6-8 tempo, 12-8 tempo, 3-4 tempo. Mm. It'll never work. It'll never work. It'll never work. And I've played in all those tempos in a concert band. So, you can do everything in a 4-4 tempo. That's why most music throughout this world is produced in 4-4 time. Mm. That's it.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Das war der Schallwandler, dieses Mal mit der Chicago-Hip-House-Legende Tyree Cooper. Mein Name ist Manuela Krause. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Macht's gut.